I had a very nice experience Sunday morning. Vrindavan, I think primarily, but some others. They have different, four or five different groups of young people. Actually, even a couple came from Milwaukee. Where children are coming together in different age groups and different teachers and different styles of teaching, gathering them together. And so we just spent some time together for about an hour and a half plus on Sunday morning, 9:30 to 10:45. The topic was, Reggie, when we picked the topic, it was volunteering, she said, because the young people, they like that word better than doing service at the temple. It was a very interactive session. But I think nice for the kids and different groups. What Prajna Bhumi is doing is really nice. There's a whole group of people that have, they're not the age of her daughter, they're just young people and a couple of different age groups. And she's reaching out and just doing something with young people. And something like six or seven, now it's teenagers, but from the Radhe Shyam temple that Vibhu Chaitanya has been interacting with, and they all came. They're not from, their parents aren't ISKCON devotees, but the kids are. And one of them was 16. I said, how long have you been Vibhu Chaitanya's teacher or student? 6 years. Said, is he a good teacher? They all said together, he's good, he's good, he's good. We wouldn't miss, I've been coming every Sunday, or whatever Saturday, once a week, for 6 years, I wouldn't miss it. Do you all chant? Yeah, we all chant. They looked at each other, they're all chanting. Just because somebody considered, you know, these young people are important. So, that they're next door and have the house to themselves, I'm sure they feel important. But they're important. There was a period of time, some number of years ago, I don't know, 8 years ago or something like that, maybe a little bit longer. We were interviewing a particular devotee, I won't say their name, as a candidate for North America Congregation Development Director. So we requested Kaunteya, who's co-director for the global, to sit with us. This was in Mayapur. And on selecting and giving some advice to starting points to job description for North America Congregation Development Director. So those of you, many of you have interacted with him. He's come here. So he sat down and I gave a little preamble of what we're looking for him. He opened up his legal pad, flipped to an open page, put his pen to the paper and said, how much time do I have? I said, okay, 15 minutes. And he started with a pyramid and then put some horizontal lines across the pyramid. He said, if you want to develop a congregation, here's what you have to do. Take care of the children, take care of the children, take care of the children. Then you'll develop congregation, then there's different divisions of taking care of the children. If you want to, so that was the 15-minute summary in 3 seconds. And although they, in Palestine, there isn't a temple, but there's a community that even, aren't even, you know, ISKCON participants. And many, he said, many of the children, he didn't say in front of them, but later, many of the children became vegetarian, meaning the parents weren't, and the parents were fine with it. But, you know, the kids were really, they want to go in that direction, and so let's see what happens in the course of time with their parents. There's so much opportunity. So much opportunity. And we're all busy. Anybody here not busy? Raise your hand. We'll give you something. We're all busy. And part of our, that's like the topic was, what's, with the children, can you give a comparison between duty and volunteering? We went through like 4 different revisions before we got something that we all agreed on. It's in the category of duty. Of course, we have to volunteer to do such a thing. You could not volunteer. But if you're part of, you're receiving, you have to give. You're part of a community, you have to give. You're part of a spiritual family, you have to participate in the spiritual family. And there's different ways to do that, but part of that something, part of our family business is reaching out, and that reaching out can be as simple as whatever it is that you can do. Distribute prasadam, or distribute books, or something. I'll get to ninth canto Srimad Bhagavatam, just a couple other things. In the course of the time that I spent in Mayapur, one of the devotees that I saw after some time was Radha Krishna Prabhu. He's the lead person at the New Braja Dham in Hungary. He attended the GBC college in the first batch, just as Nityananda Prabhu did, so from each other. I got to know him from his presentation that he did at the New Vrindavan Festival of Precipitation. It rains every time they have that festival in New Vrindavan. So I call it the Festival of Precipitation. And it was a presentation on the importance of how to, in your own little community, even if it's scalable, something in your backyard or a community project or buy a little piece of land or a farm, but doing something that shows by example, producing from the land and using the fruits of the land for Krishna. So maybe some of you remember a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, in Chicago, the Chicago Temple hosted a North American seminar on reaching the hearts and the minds of the Western population. Reaching the hearts and the minds of the Western community. The Western outreach. And he was going to come, something came up, he couldn't come. So what he did was he made Radha Krishna, made a Skype live presentation from Hungary. on following up book distribution. So when I saw him in Mayapur, I asked him, how's it going? He said, it's really evolved since that presentation 2.5 years ago. We, in Budapest, we now have 5 full-time devotees. Their entire service is just following up book distribution, contacts. And at the farm, we have full-time devotees. They do nothing else but that. I said, do you maintain them? He said, of course we maintain them. They're full-time devotees. We maintain them. I didn't ask the next question. My guess is, it's the fruit of that outreach that comes in the form of young devotees. He said, each year we're adding 15 to 20 book distributors. Each year, 15 to 20 book distributors. And there's something that comes from that book distribution that probably maintains the people that's generating the book distributors from the follow-up of book distribution. I don't know if you've wondered, but I know that many, many devotees have wondered, what happens with all those books that get distributed? Like, you know, we like to give some numbers of how many books distributed, or even just say Bhagavad Gita's. Since the ISKCON Press and then BBT started printing Bhagavad Gita, even before that was printed by Macmillan, how many Bhagavad Gita's in the world? It's a huge number. I forget the number. And it keeps growing. It's, you know, multi-million. 8 million, 9 million, 10 million, I don't know, some big number. Now, what happened with all those Bhagavad Gita's? About the people that have them? And so there's an effort, multiple efforts going around. This is one of the ways to reach out to people. Some people, they find out who's interested in reading, and then they have reading groups. And somebody just does a once a week reading group, and then new people know, and now that you have this Bhagavad Gita, if you're interested, you can join a Bhagavad Gita reading group. Here's the contact information. So it starts to grow. It's kind of like a bhakti riksha that starts to grow. And it's not terribly time consuming. It's 1 hour a week, and you do some preparing, and you communicate to the people, we're going to cover these verses this week, or however they want to structure it. Five plus seven makes 12. 12 full-time people. All they do. And Hungary's not a giant country. Hello? 15 to 20 new book distributors every year. So who knows how long they remain book distributors? Probably not terribly long. Lifespan of a few years. Maybe some people continue for a longer period of time. But that's a lot of dedication, a lot of purification, a lot of reaching people with Prabhupada's books, you know, part of the family business. So somehow or another, all of us busy people in the room need to, if we're not already, some part of a regular, whatever that cycle of time, weekly or some period of time regularly, commit to reaching. And then of course after reaching is helping people learn how to apply and learn how to live the life. Because like with these young people, that was a lot of the questions. I've got a lot of homework, and you know, you all say, you know, I've got a lot of responsibilities. You know, be a teenager again in school and see how much time you have for discretionary time. They do a lot of work. Anyway, how do I? The practical application, the challenges of peer pressure, and going the next step, going from zero rounds to one round or non-veg to veg and going to the next step and to the next step, helping people grow in Krishna consciousness. Very, very nice service. Okay, so now I'm going to read the first few verses from Canto 9, Chapter 10, Text 1 through 4 or 5. In this section, well, in the whole of the ninth canto, there's a strong focus on the lineages of kings in the Sun Dynasty and then the Moon Dynasty. And Canto 9 ends when the Moon Dynasty description brings one to the topics of Krishna. But in the Bhoja and Andaka and Vrishni Dynasty, they're from the Chandra, the Moon Dynasty, Krishna appeared. And then the expansion from the end of the tenth, ninth canto to the whole of the tenth canto, Krishna's pastimes. Obviously the largest canto in those cantos. But Canto 9 is the Sun Dynasty and then the Moon Dynasty. So we often hear the Ikshvaku Dynasty, the Sun Dynasty, because during the reign of Vaivasvata Manu, Vaivasvata Manu, who was Vivaswan, the son god, Vivaswan, one of his sons was Manu, as we read in Bhagavad Gita, that's Vaivasvata Manu. And one of Vaivasvata Manu's sons was Ikshvaku. So according to the narration in Ramayana, Manu built the city of Ayodhya. Now, Ayodhya is a transcendental place, just like Vrindavan is a transcendental place, an eternal dham. And so, it's not, as described in Bhagavad Gita, those places that are eternal dhams, they're not destroyed at the time of cosmic annihilation. Now they may not look like they look like today, but the dham, the transcendental abode of the Supreme Lord, is not destroyed. It's an eternal sacred place. But from time to time it may appear more developed or less developed. Just today I was listening to a lecture Prabhupada was giving in Vrindavan, November 76, about a year before he left this world. And he was saying, Prabhupada was saying, people in Delhi ask me, Swamiji, why have you made Vrindavan your headquarters? I've had such a bad experience there. Putting those two. And then Prabhupada just, the town of Vrindavan, and it's so unclean and unpleasant. And our place is outside of the city, outside of the town. He chose it like that on purpose, as he chose Juhu to be outside of downtown Bombay. But what it looks like today is not what it looked like when Krishna was present. And who knows what it'll look like 10 years from now or 50 years from now. But the dham is not the buildings and the roads and the sewage system and everything. The Dham is a transcendental abode. It's like the example of Bhaktivinoda of when you pour oil on a body of water or spill oil, it spreads out in a very thin sheet or sheen. And because oil and water don't mix, oil floats on the water. So when you look at the water, you don't see the water, you see the oil that's on the surface of the water. Similarly, when we look at Vrindavan or look at Ayodhya or look at a transcendental abode of the Lord, we see the external. But the essence is not the external, the essence is below the external, or the essence is the essence. So Ayodhya is an eternal abode, just like the Vaikuntha planet Ayodhya. This, what's the word? When a government has an outpost somewhere, embassy, yeah, thanks. So the embassy is a little manifestation of the country. In Delhi, the American embassy is law. They fly in American water and American cups and vice versa. In India, the Indian embassy is Little India. It's the laws are enforced by Indian law. If you break the law inside the Indian embassy, you're not arrested by the United States police or the United States government, it's the Indian government. It's as good as India. So Ayodhya is, in this realm, is the same as the Ayodhya, just apparently a smaller version. But actually the whole of the spiritual Ayodhya is there. So in any case, Manu built it, the city, as a capital, and his son Ikshvaku was the first to rule there. So from the time of Ikshvaku, then the other lineages of kings following Ikshvaku, it's from the Sun dynasty. And that's what we read here from the previous chapter. I won't go back, because from the previous chapter is Ikshvaku, and then kings from Ikshvaku. So this chapter 10 begins. The son of Maharaj Katvanga was Dirga Bahu, and his son was the celebrated Maharaj Raghu. From Maharaj Raghu came Aja, and from Aja was born the great personality Maharaj Dasarath. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the son of Maharaj Dasarath. O King Parikshit, still Shukadeva Goswami speaking, the transcendental activities of Lord Ramachandra have been described by great saintly persons who have seen the truth, because you have heard again and again about Lord Ramachandra, the husband of Mother Sita. I shall describe these activities only in brief. Please listen. And in brief means just four chapters. But Prabhupada explains in the purport something that I learned a whole lot more during the Ayodhya Yatra, that apparently even during the time of Shukadeva Goswami, there were multiple versions of Ramayana. No, Tulsi Ramayana wasn't around 5,000 years ago. And other versions, without listing them, weren't available at that time. But there were other versions at that time. And What he's saying is, I'll only recite from those that are authentic. Meaning, there were some that weren't. And because something bears the title of Ramayana, or the pastimes of Ram, or whatever the related title might be, one has to be discriminating about what you hear. Same for Krishna. Probably there's devotees in this room that have heard things that I remember hearing something somewhere. I don't know exactly where it was, and then it's confusing. And they're puzzled by something they heard that's confusing. So it's advised, be very careful, be more than careful, be very discriminating about what you hear before you hear something. Where is this coming from? I could easily give examples, but I'll give two that I find particularly irritating. One time I was I was in Calcutta, and I was going from the Calcutta temple to someplace, and there was not a single car on the street in Calcutta. No taxis, no rickshaws. There was not a single moving vehicle on the streets of Calcutta. So what happened? And somebody said, oh, the Sagar series is on right now. So it was Mahabharata, Sagar series. There's a whole, that there's no such thing. There was only one other time that happened, that I'm aware of. One time I was riding from Mayapur, and I try to avoid traveling at night, because besides traffic is bad, people get drunk, and drunken drivers on the highway is dangerous, to say the least. But one evening, there was a circumstance, and so I traveled, and there wasn't a car on the road. This is an evening. It wasn't Sagar series. I'm wondering, what's going on? And the temple, and as we were the place where I was staying, and I heard this loud, rah! It was Indian Pakistan. Whatever it's called, the World Cup or something. And India beat Pakistan, so everyone, And then all the noise started up again, and the cars were moving around. But everyone was glued to World Cup and Sagar. So within everyone's getting spoon-fed whatever is in the Sagar series of Mahabharata. And to their credit, and then to their discredit. First, to their credit, they recognize that Prabhupada's presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam and whatever he presented was authentic. And so there was a lot of collaboration. In fact, it's in the beginning, is there's letters of credit that goes to the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, and they're guiding him in presenting things. But he presented things in some other things that just they're offensive. Besides, they're wrong. But everybody, that's what they know, because Sagar said. And one of those was, they're both in relation to Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit, when he's breaking the legs of the bull, the personality of Kali is breaking the legs of the bull, and personality Kali surrenders, and so he says, okay, you can stay wherever there's the violation of the regular principles. And then Kali says, but that doesn't exist in your kingdoms, that's not fair, you've got to give me a place where those things go on. Then he says, okay, wherever there's hoarding of gold. And then Sagar shows, then the personality of Kali goes into the crown of the golden crown of Raj Pariksit. So he gets contaminated by the personality of Kali. And then when he does this thing with Shamik Rishi, there is this, you know, the personality of Kali in his golden crown, and that's why he did what he did to the person, to the Brahmana, and put the dead snake around his neck, because he was in Maya. He was influenced by the personality of Kali. Bogus. Rascal. Nonsense, and all those other words that Prabhupada would use sometimes. Maharaj Pariksit was a pure devotee. He was a pure devotee even before he was born, before he was Maharaj Pariksit. He was favored by the personality of Godhead in a very special way. No way did... So why did he do what he did? Not that reason. By the influence of the internal potency of the Supreme Lord, he did what he did. So that Shukadeva Goswami could speak Srimad Bhagavatam to a perfect listener. And so Maharaj Pariksit could be taken back to Godhead. That's why. And he went back to Godhead. In 7 days. Mercy of Krishna. Not influenced by Maya and Kali. No way. Then another is, according to the Sagar series, when Maharaj Pariksit was cursed, he was told that a snake bird would bite him and he would die, burst in flames. So Sagar shows he was in a long tower sitting on a platform way, 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 way up in the sky, because he wanted to stay away from where snakes are on the ground. No way. But people grow up, you know, eating poison, and they get poisoned. So one has to be very careful. I could elaborate, but there's other sources of things. If say with Ram's pastimes, so I won't go into it. There was a book was circulated in ISKCON about Ram's pastimes, and I started reading because the person was a good writer. But starting right off in the first chapter, it's not Ramayana. It's good writing, but it's not Ramayana. So, you know, put it away. Because the benefit of hearing Ram Katha or Krishna Katha or Hari Katha is the purity of the source, and then hearing that or repeating that which we've heard, that everything depends upon the purity of the source. The hearing into siptic succession is essential. And the same thing not in siptic succession can be detrimental. As a very new, a little something, ISKCON history. As a very new devotee, I didn't know nothing about nothing, but I heard that Prabhupada said that we shouldn't read Bhakti Siddhanta, the publication that had come from Chaitanya Math of Bhakti Siddhanta's Sri Brahma Samhita. He just told us, he didn't tell us why, but we shouldn't read it. Now, later, the BBT published it. And so what I didn't know, I found out later, is one of the things that broke apart the whole of the Gaudiya Math was, well, two things. The part that Prabhupada always emphasized is they didn't form a GBC. Instead, they wanted certain senior members of Gaudiya Math. They wanted the traditional model, that is, an acharya should be chosen. Purposefully, deliberately, Bhaktisiddhanta didn't choose. So, some of his bright followers chose. And as soon as one was chosen, then another was chosen by some ones that wanted another one. And then a big rift, and things divided. And it became fractured. Because they didn't do what Bhaktisiddhanta told them to do. But there was another issue that had to do with one of the chosen, the first of the two chosen people was like Bhaktisiddhanta, well, in the direction of Bhaktisiddhanta, super scholarly. And one of the first things he did, this is history, Gaudiya Math history, he said Bhaktisiddhanta made a mistake. And the mistake that he made had to do with the jiva and the fall of the jiva. And without all the detail, he said Bhaktisiddhanta got it wrong. Here's right. He edited the version of Brahma Samhita. Now, if unsuspecting ISKCON devotees wouldn't even know what the issue was about, what to speak of what the editing was, but it resulted in that person trashing the founder of the Gaudiya Math, and then later going on to another thing, without going into the other thing that he said. You know, in criticism of Bhaktisiddhanta. And because he was, you know, so scholarly, persons looked up to him because of his scholarship, not because of his fidelity to Bhaktisiddhanta, just the opposite. His criticism. And the purpose was to hijack Gaudiya Math. You know, towards him from what Bhaktisiddhanta had developed. So Prabhupada didn't tell us all that backroom stuff. He just said, don't read it. So we didn't read it. And then BBT published, and we could read that one. Because it was intact without those editings. So it just... The rendering of Ram's pastimes and the rendering of Krishna's pastimes, it's very, very important that we hear, and very important we know what the source is that we're hearing from. And particularly for the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, within the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's so much in the Bhagavatam itself about Krishna's pastimes and Gaudiya authors writing about Krishna's pastimes. And Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, abundant. And not as much about Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. And all the more reason we have to be discriminating about what we hear. Now I learned in the course of preparing for the Ayodhya Yatra that in addition to Ram Charitamanas, there are two or three other renderings of Ram's pastimes that are generally speaking amongst Gaudiyas, they're appreciated. They're honored. And there's distinctions between those pastimes, and some devotee scholars have gone through the trouble of identifying where the differences of the pastimes are. I'll give one example. Two examples. One example is in Valmiki Ramayana, there is no incident of Lord Ram worshipping Lord Shiva at Rameshwaram. It's just absent from Valmiki Ramayana. And something that I was surprised when we went to the South India Yatra, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Rameshwaram, and before the deity of Rameshwara, he chanted and danced. So he was honoring something that's not in Valmiki Ramayana as part of the pastimes of us, at least, the followers of Mahaprabhu. We can accept the pastime, even though it's not in Valmiki Ramayana, honored by Lord Ramachandra. Then another pastime that's not, there's many, but just to name a couple well-known ones. One that's not in Valmiki Ramayana is Lakshman Rekha. It's not there. But so many illustrations are there about the presentation of Lakshman with the tip of his bow making a circle around Sita and saying, don't step across this, otherwise you're at risk. And she stepped across, and on that basis Ravan was able to kidnap her because she didn't follow that instruction, that protection that was given to her. And so a teaching is within the instructions, there's protection. Stay within instructions and you're protected. Step across, take that little risk of stepping across the instruction, and you're at risk. And at risk can be a very dangerous thing. Big time dangerous thing. So don't violate instructions. Stay protected within instructions. Just thinking of some other pastime that just went away. Ramayana pastime. Yeah, Shabari. Some versions of Ramayana say that Shabari ate before she gave. And some versions are very specific and say that she wanted to make sure that, because it was forest items, that it was offerable, and so she wanted to see if it was offerable to Lord Ram, and therefore she did that tasting before then giving, you know, from the sample she tasted something before she gave to Ram. Anyway, different versions, but there's even within those varieties of versions, one has to be very careful. Where is it coming from? And Google is not a good reference source. If, in case you didn't know. One of the, just like Krishna consciousness has spread very quickly through the use of technology, the printing press, recorded messages. Srila Prabhupada used that system abundantly. Impersonalism has also rampantly spread through the internet. And, you know, Google something and you get 10 versions of something impersonal and one version of something that's more Vaishnava-like. best to be, in any case, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost pramana, amala pramana, or the spotless pramana. And we know that whatever is here, we accept. Just here, just, I know what the other thing I was thinking of. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, when there's this description given by Shukadeva Goswami about the sons of King Sagara, how many? 60,000 sons? The sons of Sagara, they're looking for the stolen Ashwamedha horse. Ashwamedha Yajna, Indra has stolen the horse, and he took it to the abode where Lord Kapila was residing and engaged in meditation, and they thought he was the thief of the horse, so they attacked him. Right in the verses, Shukadeva Goswami says, there are versions that say that from the eyes of Kapila Dev, fire came and burned to ashes the bodies of the 60,000 sons of Sagara. But he said, it's not purport. Shukadeva Goswami says, that's not possible. That the personality of Godhead becomes angry like that and burns 60,000 princes. Rather, Shukadeva Goswami, in the verse, says, because of their intense sinful act of attempting to harm the personality of Godhead, that sinful reaction immediately burst their body into flames. All 60,000 sons. They burst into flame for that reason. Sin is very powerful. There's another reference like that from one of the Puranas. No. Upanishads. Which is the Upanishad where Nachiketa is sent to go get fire from the abode of Yamaraj? Huh? Katha Upanishad. So he goes, his spiritual master tells him to go get fire for the yajna, and go ask Yamaraj for some fire. There's lots of fire down there in the hellish region. So he goes. Yes, sir. Young brahmachari goes. And when he gets to the abode of Yamaraj, he sees fire everywhere and people suffering, and he asks Yamaraj, could I have some fire? And he said, I can't. The fire stays here because the people that came here, before they came here, there was no fire. But because of their intense sinful activities, there's fire everywhere. In some cases, the fire just followed them. But you can't take it from here because it's from these sinful people. Anyway, these are statements that we can take directly as authorized, and we have to be really careful. Really, really careful. I hope I'm not intimidating you or boring you or something. There's in one of the presentations, it's just another reference. In one of the presentations that I've been making of late, there's a reference to Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying in Krishna Samhita that the Shikshastaka verses, anybody here not know what Shikshastaka verses are? Shikshastaka verses, okay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't make writings except for what's known, Shiksha, Astaka. And those eight instructions are instructions in, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how to chant the holy name. Because he came to give the holy name. So he gives teachings how to chant the holy name up to the stage of perfection. And it starts in a summary verse, first verse number one, and then takes one to the stage of perfection. It's like a map to get to the treasure of Krishna Prema through the chanting of the holy name, step by step by step. So one of the places that he details that is in Krishna Samhita. And I knew that there was another reference, but I couldn't remember the name of it. So somebody asked me that question during a class. What was that other reference for Bhakti? I'd like to look it up. So I said, I don't know, but I'll find out. So I knew where to go to find out. And that's Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. Some of you don't know Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. He's the best writer in ISKCON, in my opinion and the opinion of many. He was a GBC in Philadelphia and the East Coast for some time. He's now in the stage of GBC emeritus, that is, he doesn't have active GBC duties, so that he can write. So I asked him, I'm not really covering Ram's pastimes, I'm covering a point about Ram's pastimes. We have to read from authorized or hear from authorized sources. So I contacted Ravindra, you know, about a year after he had taken GBC emeritus and said, I just asked him, it was about something else, coming to a function, was he able to come? And I asked him, what book are you writing? I know that you have five different books that you write about. He said, I'm writing a book about chanting the holy name following Bhaktivinoda Thakur's instructions on Shikshastaka as a map. It's a GPS, how to get to Krishna Prema through the holy name. And then he described to me what he's personally doing, how he's every day focusing on his chanting. I imagine he's chanting more than 16 rounds. He's just focusing on, in the concluding chapter of his life, reaching Krishna Prema, following the roadmap of Lord Chaitanya's teachings, Shikshastaka. He said, wow, I can't wait to read the book. Because he was describing some of what he does and his realizations from it. So his Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's assistant or secretary is a PhD graduate from Harvard Divinity School, Shraddha Devi Dasi. Brilliant, as is he. Brilliant. So I asked her, what's the name of this other book? She said, the other book is such and such, and there's versions of it floating around ISKCON, but they're all flawed, significantly flawed. And so I, Shraddha, and Pradumna Prabhu, Pradumna is the Sanskrit scholar that Prabhupada worked closely with during his time for editing the synonyms and other things that had to do with editing of his books. Prabhupada called him Panditji, Sanskrit scholar, like very lofty, doesn't even know where the ground is, he's just floating around somewhere, kind of a scholar. He is working with Shraddha on upper translation. It's verse by the eight verses written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a commentary on those eight verses. You know, giving his realizations of how to get to Krishna Prema from chanting the holy name guided by Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastakam. So a friend, a god brother, In the past 10 days, wrote me a letter saying, over here it says this and over here it says that, and how do I reconcile? And it turns out one of the first ones is this floating around translation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Shikshastakam. And I just said, you know, why don't you wait for a year when Shraddha finally finishes a proper translation you know, carefully done. Because devotees are eager to receive from our acharyas, and they don't really know, you know, turn left or turn right. But they make a translation, so something's out there. And then that something that's out there can be misleading. So be careful. Just a little, I'll end with this. Maybe I'll read one more verse just so we'll get back to Ramayana. But while I was in Mayapur, I was invited to do a service that I don't feel qualified for, but a writing service, and that is the BBT is making a plan to have really, really high quality translations of the writings of the Goswamis. Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, one of Prabhupada's disciples, is no longer with us. He left this world some time ago, a few years ago. So there's a BBT director, Devamrita Swami, who is largely based in Australia and New Zealand, but is now doing lots of service in America. We know each other from the very beginning of his Krishna consciousness. He was a Yale University graduate and then became a devotee at the Brooklyn Temple and then went to Los Angeles to be part of the BBT, and then his services went elsewhere. He invited me, would you be open to the idea of writing an introductory kind of a book to the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami? I said, I'm interested, but I know, what are you looking for? Well, the texts are very high, and our feedback is that regular devotee readership it's great for scholars and for the general devotees. They can't access it so easily. So would you be willing to write something that's, you know, however you want to do it? You know, just, you know, kept asking, you want this, you want that, however you want to do it. But the goal would be something that devotees in general could get an idea of what's in the Sandarbhas. It's very soon, I was told, the Bhagavat, the next of the Sandarbhas, for those of you that are a little newer. It's a six-part commentary on the Bhagavatam by topic. Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayoga, the relationship of all things with the source of all things, Sambandha, relationship. And then, what does it look like when you act in that relationship with the source of all things? Bhakti Sandarbha. And what's the fruit of bhakti? What does that look like? That's Priti Sandarbha. So that's Sandarbhas, and there's an effort to do a high quality presentation on those, because Jiva Goswami wrote them, but the translations may not be so refined. But something's out there, but not so refined. So I'm a Jiva Goswami fan and proud of it. I love it. How he writes is just awesome. So I don't have the credential to, you know, do any of this, but I'll take guidance from people that do and put it in language. So if you don't see me traveling around so much in the coming time, you know, I'm in off in some seclusion reading the writings of the Jiva Goswami and helping to write an introductory text for the devotee world that can then be available. I don't know. That's a lovely assignment. But it's important to get it right. And it's not just, you know, quote, scholarship. It's, you know, transparent. That's what's important. Whether the language is, like Gopi did, is really high. It's summarized, but it's, you know, it's for the audience, at least one of the audiences that he was writing for, is people that are teaching this subject in universities. They're teaching about Jiva Goswami. And he wants to give them, you know, a correct understanding of what Jiva Goswami has written. Because they're, so better they get the right understanding than a gobbledygook understanding. But then, you know, for the regular devotee audience, it may be a little high. So how to take that transparent message that Gopi was able to glean from his writings in Sanskrit, because I don't know Sanskrit, for a regular devotee audience. So all of this past 20 minutes or whatever it is when we're hearing a pastime, hearing something about the process of bhakti and the object of the process of bhakti, Rama or Krishna or Lord Nrisimhadev or whatever, we need to be really clear what the source is. And if it's, you're not clear what the source is, turn off your TV set in the Sagar series. Because it may not be giving you or your children a proper understanding. And then they grow up with that other understanding. And when they hear the, you know, authentic understanding, it's irritating. Glorification of the personality of Godhead is our life. And we want to get it right of who he is and how he manifests his glories, because within that manifesting of his glories there's potencies that help us reach the goal. I'm going to read one more verse. Look at this, it's a long one. To keep the promise of his father intact, Lord Ramachandra immediately gave up the position of king and, accompanied by his wife, Mother Sita, wandered from one forest to another on his lotus feet, which that they were unable to bear even the touch of Sita's palms. The Lord was also accompanied by Hanuman, king of the monkeys, or by another monkey, Sugriva, and by his younger brother, Lord Lakshmana, both of whom gave him relief from the fatigue of wandering in the forest. Having cut off the nose and ears of Shuparnakha, thus disfiguring her, the Lord was separated from Mother Sita. He therefore became angry, moving his eyebrows and thus frightening the ocean, who then allowed the Lord to construct a bridge to cross the ocean. Subsequently, the Lord entered the kingdom of Ravana to kill him like a fire devouring a forest. May that Supreme Lord Ramachandra give us all protection. That's one verse. Now it's not in prose. I mean, it's not in poetry, it's in prose. Giving this first chapter is just little snippets of, as you can see, the pastimes. And even the details. Like when Ram requested the Samudra to assist him to cross to Lanka. He doesn't need anybody's assistance to do anything. But it was an opportunity for Samudra to do some service. And he was reluctant. And so different versions. And so you see paintings where Ram is firing an arrow and the arrow goes into the ocean starts to boil. Here it's just he's moving his eyebrows. His eyes, the adyaksha, the vision of the the glance of the personality of Godhead is very, very powerful. So it's not a problem because Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vrittimanti. With one limb he can do anything any one of the other limbs can do. It's no problem at all. He's all powerful. His body is all spiritual. So if his body is all spiritual, then how is this that he can't walk in the forest with bare feet? It's not, his body doesn't have the same symptoms that we do. It's because his body is all spiritual. That's a very important understanding that Krishna presents in Bhagavad Gita about himself, and similarly we should understand about Lord Ram. And in so many ways, you know, the feelings of love that Ram has, it's charming for worldly people. But it's not, you know, the love of a man for his wife. Or then the feelings of separation from a man from his wife. And the sorrow that Lord Ramachandra is experiencing is not the sorrow of a grieving man when he knows his wife is in difficulty. This is a reflection, a distorted reflection of that. What he's exhibiting to the world is transcendental love and separation. As the transcendental love is not worldly, the feelings of separation is not worldly. Now, it's not possible to understand that without proper guidance from the acharyas that explain it in a proper way, and otherwise one's going to get the wrong idea. This is abundant. So we need to hear from the right sources and hear the explanation from those right sources. And then the intended purpose of his pastimes, that is to attract us back to the spiritual world, will become successful. So we'll continue tomorrow with pastimes of Ramachandra. We'll do some more of the pastimes and less this preamble thing. Any comments? Questions? Yes?
Maharaj, in the Ayodhya Yatra, you were talking about the seeming discrepancies in different versions of the pastimes of the Lord.
Yeah.
Could sometimes be reconciled based on the fact that it could have happened in different millennia.
Yes.
But then as a novice who is approaching this vast scriptures, the basis of today's class, as I understand, is source of knowledge, or to make sure that we get authentic knowledge.
Yes.
On one hand, there is seeming discrepancies which could possibly be from different millennia.
Yes.
And on the other hand, we're not sure one is right.
So, what to do? We, fortunately, we have a line of deceptive succession. And those sources that in the line of deceptive succession they have accepted, we can accept. Best, even with sources that they accept, is we know what they say, because some things may not be so acceptable from verses. I'm just thinking in particular of one example, and that is the example of Sridhar Swami. Prior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, Sridhar Swami, who was in the line of Madhvacharya, wrote a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, and there was a strategy involved. The strategy involved was Sridhar Swami knew that Shankaracharya had an attraction for Srimad Bhagavatam, because he wrote an ashtakam, 8 verses, that are glorifying Krishna, specifically identifying pastimes that are only in Srimad Bhagavatam and not in other Puranas. So he was familiar with it, but he was honoring Krishna in those 8 verses, which meant that followers of Shankaracharya had some attraction for Bhagavatam because he had attraction for Bhagavatam. So he had, his strategy was put some sprinkling of renderings of what's in Srimad Bhagavatam that would appease the impersonal mind. Because if it was just Vaishnava, they would go make their own commentary and make a muck of things. It was strategic. So Jiva Goswami, when he wrote his Sandarbhas, I made mention of the Sandarbhas, his commentary on the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, one of his principal references is the commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam by Sridhar Swami, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as the authoritative commentator. Then he specifically says only those portions that are within the Siddhanta of the Gaudiya line. So meaning, he's just not going to bring up, there's some other things. Didn't make no reference at all. He'll only speak of those things that are very Krishna conscious. So in that case, we can just follow Jiva Goswami and he knows the whole of Sridhar Swami's commentary. We can stay away from the other parts. To become, you know, adequately or reasonably familiar with Jiva Goswami's commentaries, and then we'll know what to accept from Sridhar Swami and what not to. When in doubt, don't. But our acharyas, some references have been made to places where Srila Prabhupada or other acharyas make reference to a particular text. So that tells us something about that text. That's in the category of something that's, at least portions of it are something that's authorized. Even with Valmiki Ramayan, which is the correct Valmiki Ramayan? In ISKCON, Krishna Dharma made a rendering of Ram's Leela. But you read carefully in the preface, and he took some things from other than Valmiki Ramayan. And he, you know, states it very clearly. But he was very careful. From certain reference sources about Ramayana, about Ram's pastimes, that you will not find in Valmiki Ramayana. That's a good source. It's not the full pastime. If you're really interested, one devotee in St. Louis, Lal Gopal, you know him? He spent a lot of time preparing for the Hindu temple, a presentation largely for children, but it ended up, a lot of adults came too. You know, a several month presentation of the whole of Ramayana. So he would be a good person to ask that question of, which are versions that are okay to read. And if you don't know his contact information, Premananda does. Lal Gopal. Yeah. He knows a lot. including commentaries, Sri Vaishnava commentaries. Just as our acharyas comment a lot about Krishna's pastimes, their acharyas comment a lot about Ram's pastimes. And there are some that are more authentic and more infidelity than others. And he's turned into that. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, this is a what-to-do question for the devotee. Would you please clarify for me, reading of the Chaitanya Charitamrita versus the Chaitanya Bhagavata? Would you recommend any order of preference or sequence?
The Charitamrita. And because that's what Srila Prabhupada chose to give to us. Now, he may have chosen to give that to us because, you know, for whatever the reasons, but the Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a comprehensive and authoritative picture of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings, his pastimes and his teachings. Because the author, Krishnadas Kaviraj, was that kind of an author. Whereas Vrindavan Das Thakur did not, he was so spontaneous, he didn't go to the trouble of validating anything. He just spontaneously expressed his ecstatic, spontaneous, loving devotion for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. And I don't care if you like it or not. You know, it was like sticking his tongue out, but he made no effort to give the scriptural basis and support, whereas Krishnadas Kaviraj does. It, both by his nature and perhaps, you know, the audience. He wanted to stand the test of time and just had that acumen, and so he gave in that way. So therefore Prabhupada chose. Because Bhaktisiddhanta, obviously, he had a commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita as well as Chaitanya Bhagavat. So when reading Chaitanya Bhagavat, be sure to read with Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary translated into English. But that doesn't have it doesn't have the same touch as Srila Prabhupada's purports. Because sometimes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada chose to just directly say Bhaktisiddhanta says this, like the Gundicha temple. The Gundicha Marjana pastime. Bhaktisiddhanta writes, and it's like several pages. Times he would just make a little reference. So Chaitanya Charitamrita first. Yes?
Thank you, Samara. All right, quite distributing the Prabhupada's or gifting Prabhupada's books to people, especially Indian Americans. If we are asked this question, why is Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita or the books more authentic compared to what they've been reading all their life? Or is there a third party who has reviewed these and made any suggestions or comments? What should be our response? I've been asked this question a couple of times.
Well, it depends on the person you're speaking to. But Prabhupada wrote why he made another translation. Because he was asked by an American woman, Swamiji, can you recommend a translation of Bhagavad Gita for me to read? He said, actually, no. Because although at that time there are 100 versions in the marketplace, all of them are from this ascending approach, none of them from the descending approach. Descending approach meaning given into cyclic succession. So the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is to be received into cyclic succession, not the ascending approach. Scholarship is not, doesn't give access to the message of Bhagavad Gita or the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. It remains a mystery. So disclosure comes through disciplic succession. You could take them right to, you know, chapter 4. Yoga nashta parantapa. The knowledge has been lost. and therefore I'm speaking it again. Because the disciplic succession was broken. So where there's this unbroken, transparent transmission of knowledge of disciplic succession, that's what you want. And otherwise, the knowledge is lost. What you'll get is scholar X saying, this is what Krishna said, and really what you're getting is what scholar X's point of view is. That's the ascending approach. And it doesn't give access to Krishna and Krishna's message that way. Right in chapter 4. Hope the children are having a great time. Maybe they'll come when it's prasadam time. Huh? Okay. Okay. We'll end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.